Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me today is Marvin Smith. And besides being a former co-host of this show, he played in the NFL for the Rams and the Raiders. He is also an ordained minister and very active in many charities that involve helping people all over the world, which makes him a great fit to co-host this show anytime. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I would really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we together can make that positive difference in the world. Now, with all the negativity and divisiveness that's out there these days, I hope that you will find answersforthefamily.com a place that you can go to see and hear some of the good and positive things that are happening in the world. And with that in mind, if there was ever a time in recent years that we needed to focus on gratitude, this is the time. And my son Chase and I wrote the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, something that at the time was geared towards teens going through some changes in their life. Well, we're all going through changes in our lives right now. So please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a free copy. It's our gift to you. All I ask is that you subscribe for free, give it 21 days, and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, although not from the journal, is by Mohammed Safa. He's a human rights advocate and a permanent representative of the United Nations. And the quote is, "Our world is not divided by race, color, gender, or religion. Our world is divided into wise people and fools. And the fools divide themselves by race, color, gender, or religion." Now, Mohammed is a member of the Young Champions of Earth and the executive director of Patriotic Vision, which desires that every youth has an opportunity to live a full and prosperous life. It aims at contributing to the United Nations goal of Youth 2030 by contributing education and vision to communities all over the world. Now that, I think, is the type of quote that we should be hearing all the time and the type of things that I'd like to be hearing on the network news or anywhere else out there where we might get our news these days. Marvin, are you with us, and how are things going for you?
I'm here, Alan. I'm listening to you. It's been a long time since I've had the opportunity to co-host with you, which is exciting. It always is. It's good to see you. Good to see Claudia as well. First time getting a chance to meet her. But I'm doing well. And I, one thing that you said about the quote from Mohammed, it reminds me of my dad, who was an educator, an administrator, and he made a comment to me at one point, when I had my first encounter with this thing called prejudice. Can I take a quick minute?
Sure, please.
Okay, well, real quick. Then I was like, I'll never forget this. And Claudia, which I'm talking about pediatrics, I was like 5 years old. I never forget. I was in kindergarten, and we were like the second Black family in this neighborhood. And so I got a friend who was a white kid, and we're at the park, the local park. And so every day we play at school, and next thing I know, he starts calling me out of my name. He called me the N-word, the horrid N-word, right? And I'm going, "Johnny, you're my friend." And I'm 5 years old. What does that mean? And so long story short, my cousin, my aunt, was babysitting, and she walks over to a tree, and she grabs a branch, not a switch, but a branch, right? Takes all the leaves off. She says, "Look, buddy, you're either going to fight him or fight me." And I had a better chance with him than her. Right? So long story short, we had this altercation, and I never forget, I got home. My dad was, he comes and he says, "Hey, tell me about your day." And we started talking, and he says, "So I heard about what happened." He goes, "Yeah." He said, "You know, there's only two types of people in this world." And I thought my dad had lost his mind at this point. So I said, "I'm already at white, black, green, yellow. I mean, I'm going down the list." And he goes, "Good and bad." He said, "So the lesson to learn is pick your friends wisely."
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
He said, "Color is not the issue."
That's right. Well, and I think that goes with as far as our topic today, because it's about the secret to building intimacy, resilience, and trust. And with our community, with our our loved ones, and that's what it's about, is, are we going to build resilience? Are we going to build trust? And our guest, Claudia M. Gold, MD, is a pediatrician and writer who practiced general and behavioral pediatrics for over 20 years and now specializes in early childhood mental health. She is on the faculty of the University of Massachusetts Boston Infant Parent Mental Health Program, the Brazelton Institute at Boston Children's Hospital, and the Berkshire Psychoanalytic Institute. Claudia is a clinician with First Steps Together, a program for pregnant and parenting women recovering from opiate addiction or dependence, and director of the Hello, It's Me Project, a community-based program supporting parent-infant relationships in rural Western Massachusetts. Dr. Gold speaks frequently to a variety of audiences, including parents and professionals. She writes regularly for her blog, Child in Mind. Here to talk about her new book, The Power of Discord, Why the Ups and Downs of Relationship Are the Secret to Building Intimacy, Resilience, and Trust. Dr. Claudia Gold, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it is our pleasure. I really enjoyed going through the book, and I really thought that this was a really good fit for what it is that's going on right now. You know, there is a lot of discord out there, and I don't think people are looking at it as something that they can grow from or learn from. So I think your timing in regards to the book is excellent. So share a little bit about why you decided, I'm going to write this book, and this is the time to do it.
Okay, well, that's a great question. And I have to say, since the book came out June 2nd, we did not quite anticipate this degree of discord. And I think it's been an incredible opportunity to take what is an extraordinarily difficult situation and look at it as an opportunity to find meaning and find our way forward in a better way. I'm really struck, Marvin, by that story you opened with, because really it highlights how here as a grown person, something that happened to you when you were five is still so alive. And what we talk about in the book is that the roots of trust really are in our earliest relationships. As you describe in relationship with your dad, and how by working through difficult moments, not that things always go well, but it's in the messiness and in the difficult moments when we get through something together that we really develop trust in each other. And certainly in our world today, we see trust so deeply eroded on many levels, so that going forward, we can look at this period of time as kind of messiness beyond what any of us sometimes feel that we can handle, but mm-hmm. perhaps needed in order for us to really go on to perhaps a new period of growth and healing.
Well, and that's certainly what I'm hoping that we can do. And so we're trying to focus on as many of the positive things that can come out of this, but we're also asking people to learn, to learn from what's going on and think about what it is that you're passing down to your children. And again, that's where I think that your book is such a huge positive force that's out there, because it touches on the fact that what we're passing on is going on into the next generation. So if we can make the changes at an early stage, I think that's where we're going to be able to really put a lot of these very negative and divisive things behind us.
And I think adding to that, Alan, Claudia, one thing I realized, and all the research shows that, early, even when we look at education, early education is paramount to success forward. It's just cognitively how we think, how we start to view things. And those early interactions really, like I say, at my age, I'm not going to tell you my age because I'm really younger than Alan. But even at our age, you know, I look back and I look at the things that shaped me to where I'm at today. And I look at a lot of kids and a lot of work that I do in the communities that they don't have this foundation like right. I did or Alan did or you when we were growing up. And it's much different. And you know, now these kids, their face are stuck in, you know, it's almost like a babysitter, some electronic device. And now we're showing, there's a lot of studies showing there's facts and issues with that's impeding upon mature, you know, as far as growth as well.
Yeah. And I think there are actually two basic lessons from the power of discord. And one is at the level of how do we make changes in the way we support parents and young children. And the second layer is in how does our knowledge about how we develop trust impact on the way we deal with each other as adults. So I think both of those things are really in the book. And the first being that by supporting parents and recognizing the tremendous value of parents, which tend to be really undervalued in our culture, in very concrete ways, like paid parental leave and quality early, quality childcare, really investing in early relationships is so critical. But then that when we are in this very messy, uncertain period, the solution to going forward is really in relationships. Because if we just kind of talk at each other and explain each other's point of view, you know, explain our way of seeing it without having a relationship with the person we're speaking with, then they won't, it impairs people's ability to listen to each other.
It reminds me of the saying about people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Right, right.
That's a great point. Now, I have a question from the standpoint of technology. And Marvin mentioned it a little bit ago in regards to the kids and their technology, but you touch on it in a different way in your book that I'd really like you to go into because I hadn't heard this before. But so how has technology recreated the still face paradigm for developing children? You know, the she is there, but she's not really there kind of issue that you touch on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the point we make in the book is actually that the still face paradigm, which I can describe very briefly here, is fundamentally different from a parent on a cell phone. Because in the still face paradigm, which was an experimental paradigm that Dr. Tronick set up to explore the question of how much does the baby contribute to the relationship? And in the still face paradigm, the mother interacts with the baby as she typically would. And then she, at the instruction of the researcher, has a completely still face. So she doesn't speak. The muscles of her face don't move. And then the baby, you see the baby kind of responds immediately and tries to engage her. And shows this kind of tremendous sense of hopefulness and agency. And then the mother, the baby gets very upset, and then the mother begins to interact typically. Make sense of. Now, a parent on a cell phone is different from that. A parent from a cell phone is actually in a lot of ways no different from what the three of us probably grew up with, which is a parent on a landline.
Right.
And even my kids grew up with that. And they would get upset when their parent was on the phone because they've lost their parents' attention. So it's a problem of a deficit of attention. But it's not the still face paradigm. So I think technology gets kind of a bad rap. And there was a recent film actually that Netflix put out about the social dilemma. And I think it underestimates the power of human connection because the problem is not the technology, but the paucity of actual human connection and art and literature and music and dance and all of those things that we can do together that have to counteract the technology. Not that we need to eliminate the technology, but we need to also have relational experiences that are also intertwined with movement of our body and engagement with each other in ways that make us kind of uniquely human.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'm glad you brought up The Social Dilemma, and I was not connected with that show, but I recommend that to everybody. I think everybody, every human being that is connected at all, if you have access to Netflix, watch it, okay? Because that means you already have enough of a connection to technology that you need to be watching this. And I would watch it as soon as possible. In fact, I'd make sure and watch it before the election.
Yes.
Everybody should. But so I'm glad that you explained that, because I think in the book, I think we're sort of tying into the fact that, or that the study was sort of trying to say that if we continue to get more and more to this age of interacting with our children at a younger and younger age through a device that is not three-dimensional, that they would get that sort of still face or flat face type of look. And I thought that was part of that whole study that you were talking about, as opposed to them just being still. I thought they were trying to emulate what it would be like if they were on a, on a FaceTime or something like that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I had the opportunity to clear that up, because because often people will learn about the still face experiment and say, oh, that's what we're doing with technology. But it's actually not what we're doing with technology. And technology is problematic in many, many, many ways, particularly with the kind of, profit-based manipulation of children. Mm-hmm. But I think that what the book is really trying to bring to life is how much is gained from human interaction. Not so it's kind of a yes and. And my mm-hmm. only a critique of the film is that it makes humans seem sort of powerless. You know, well, just turn off your notifications. But we have, a very rich history of, evolution behind us to that, this kind of, even just the way, it's a little bit limited in the Zoom setting, but, the tremendous variety of muscles of the face, we have like hundreds of muscles in our face and in our voice, and all of those serve to regulate our physiology and are really essential to our success as humans. And so we need to make use of those. And so that's why I call it a yes and, because if people, when it's just prohibitive, okay, put down the phone, have rules, keep the phone downstairs. Yes, all those things are true. But if it's only prohibitions, that's not sufficient. It has to be additions, things like reading books together or doing, I often with the families I work with, I often recommend they do martial arts together, things where you move in relationship or drawing. I have a story in the book about a mother who was very distraught at the end of the day from a busy day at work, and her daughter was constantly demanding of her and that she found, like, if she had her daughter sit on her lap and they colored together, their bodies could relax and they could really connect with each other in a way that was regulating for them. So being creative a lot in the country and using creative ways to connect. So I hope that clarifies things as well.
Yeah, I think it does. Go ahead, Marvin.
Okay, yeah, what I was going to say, Doctor, is the fact that it makes me think about like face masks. I mean, that I noticed, like, now, if we're wearing face masks, if you can't see somebody's mouth, it really takes away from that interaction of what's being said. And the other thing I think about too is mirror neurons. At a young age, what primates are, supposed, I guess, the only species that have the mirror neurons and this interaction, that mirroring, be able to mirror what they see. And and if you don't have that interaction, how does that happen?
Yeah, so mirror neurons are really central to our capacity for empathy, to be able to feel what another person experiences, what another person's experiencing. But I love the fact that you brought up masks, because this is a very another. And, I've discussed it quite a bit with my co-author, Dr. Tronick. So first of all, there's the science, that the masks are going to save lives. So and that is absolutely clear. And the other is that kids are very adaptable. And sure, you don't see the muscles around the mouth with the but with so much of our expressiveness is around our eyes and also in our tone of voice and even in the way we hold our bodies. So I do feel that kids will be fine with us wearing masks, which we need to do for public health measures. And I think a lot of the anxiety about kids and masks is kind of misplaced, because really there are a lot of significant losses that kids will have, like the ability to run up and give you a hug in school, or a lot of thought into how to manage those kinds of things. But I really think that we will find that the masks are something that kids are very well able to get used to without any significant harmful effects.
Well, I think kids are more adaptable than adults.
Yes.
and adults want to put our emphasis upon them and say, this is how you guys are. And they're like, I'm the little ones. Well, they said, they can't speak for themselves, or really, you know, so we got to be there as the advocates.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I'm glad that you brought up the masks. One of my thoughts, though, was what would be the, would you be supportive of if there was a push towards more transparent masks? In other words, we know that there are materials also that are more transparent, to where we can still see some of those facial expressions and things. If you could touch on that, but also the hugging, you know, the running up and hugging. How do you think that's going to affect when you have a lot of us? I'm a hugger. A lot of people that I know are. And I think that I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on the long-term effect on children that may now kind of grow up without that type of loving interaction.
Yeah. So as far as the clear masks, I think, yes, that would be great. I just really think it's not that big a deal either way. If we could get them, it would be great. I also know that my daughter is a medical student. I know doctors often have buttons with their face on them so you can see what they look like. And actually, in some ways, that's better, because you can't really tell what someone looks like with a clear mask over their face. So if we all start wearing buttons that show what we look like. Interacting with kids who don't know them. But as far as the hugging, yes, I think that those are the kinds of things. I think the body position, the sort of overall level of fear that we all live with in some way all the time when we're out in the world, I think that that's really problematic for everyone. And not that there's anything that we can really do about it other than to notice it and pay attention to it, talk to our kids about it, you know, again, be creative. I work with families who have kids who are in child protective custody, which is so excruciatingly painful because they only have these very brief visits with their kids. So they have ways of, like, kids are allowed to hug them around their legs. So coming up with kind of creative solutions. This is a tough time that we're going through. And we recognize the loss. I have another friend who talked about, like, trees. This is a little woo-woo for you, but, you know, trees communicate through roots, you know? So if we think about, just visualize the way trees communicate, that we're going to have to temporarily have some sort of rootedness on the earth by which we communicate with each other that doesn't involve hugging.
Yeah, yeah. Either that or a high five is now going to be toes instead of fingers or something.
Yeah.
So now in going with the concept of hugging, and what I was concerned with is that a lot of people are saying, quote, this is the new norm. But I like the fact that you talked about, as long as we're communicating with them, that this, you know, that they don't have to look at this as you have to now do this for the rest of your life, and that within your family, you can still have a close, you know, I think that will help. But, you know, what do you think the connection then is going to be between anxiety, depression, you know, social media, and are all of these things going to create even greater loneliness?
Yeah, well, I certainly think that there is one very problematic and painful effect of the pandemic is increases in anxiety and depression. and loneliness. And certainly in I work with this very vulnerable group of moms with opioid use disorders, and we've seen an increase in overdose. So this is where we can actually bring in the lessons of the book, which is that the way in our bodies we can feel safe is in moment-to-moment interactions. So overall, things may be really problematic, but if we can make small moments of meeting with each other, even in the virtual setting, where or in our family, where people are kind of on top of each other and there's a lot more discord, if you can have a tough time and then make your way through the tough time to a moment of connection, that's how we grow. And those, what the book talks about, before we knew we were going to have so much discord, is how that's really positive. So we have to make use of all of this discord that we're experiencing by finding on a small scale ways of getting through it and making connection with each other. So again, using my clinical experience, I run a group, it's remote, with moms, who many of whom have lost custody of their kids. And you would be amazed at how many kind of really profoundly meaningful connections we make with each other when a mom will talk about the despair she feels when her 7-month-old, you know, is afraid of her and doesn't recognize her. And we connect with each other around that, and those little moments strung together will allow us to survive and then be able to feel okay enough to, you know, to deal with whatever comes next.
Mm-hmm. And Marvin, you founded actually more than one, but a foundation that works with kids. What have you seen in some of the changes and such with the kids that you've dealt with?
Man, it's been interesting. One thing I've noticed a lot is they have a lot to say, and just being in position to hear them has the opportunity to take away. They're just, and so when they've been locked down, put away, you know, from the standpoint of not feeling like they're anybody, you know, this is where I've seen that, you know, this whole sense of depression and the anxiety seems to kick in. And then if you're looking at any media, that media is not helping the situation. It just seems to exacerbate and just amplify what's bad. But one thing I'm finding out is communication and being, I think, like Dr. Gold is saying, is, you know, being able to have that communication and interacting to the best of our ability, whether it's social media, but some kind of way, but that to give that presence. It makes a difference in the world. So which I think is a good segue too for Dr. Gold is, you know, when we don't feel known, you know, when lack of love is deadly, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, to me, the saying goes back to, you know, a lot of times in underserved communities, when there's no hope, we become hopeless.
Yeah.
And when hopelessness comes in, a person's willing to do anything and everything in the process of basic survival.
Yeah. So I think that, that hopelessness can come in when, even as a young child in situations of, you know, intergenerational trauma, poverty, racism, abuse, you know, things that people experience that leave them with lack of opportunity for repair. And so that they don't have that expectation that when things are difficult, there will be a way to find your way to the other side. And that's really what hopelessness is. And what we learn from the research with babies is that if you want to change that, it's not just a one-dimensional or even a two-dimensional solution, because our sense of hopelessness, just as it emerges in hundreds of thousands of problematic interactions, in order to regain a sense of hope, it means we need to be immersed in hundreds of thousands of new types of interactions, such as what I imagine you provide for the kids in your program, including you know, things, many different kinds of activities that kids can be in with relation with other people that can begin to give them a more hopeful sense of themselves in the world.
Yes, that's great.
Well, the book is called The Power of Discord: Why the Ups and Downs of Relationships Are the Secret to Building Intimacy, Resilience, and Trust. We are speaking with the author, Dr. Claudia Gold. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. My co-host today is Marvin Smith, and we are talking with Dr. Claudia Gold, and we are really focusing on anything that can help build resilience. We are talking about resilience. We're talking about building relationships and doing so at times in which there may be discord. So one of the things in the book, Claudia, that I saw is you talk about the connection between autism and technology. Autism is something that I'm very concerned with. Through our adolescent services company, we transport a lot of autistic patients to specialized programs. And so I've delved more into some of the statistics of it. And it's frightening, the increase that we're having in this. I'd like to know more about your thoughts on this. So please share with us.
Well, I have the privilege as a pediatrician of seeing things very early in development. So way before a child receives a label of autism, I get to see kind of the roots of their experience. So kids who go on to have a diagnosis of autism are often, not always, but often tend to be intensely reactive to sensory experience. So that the world, things like a birthday party that seems like a fun thing to your average neurotypical child becomes something that's totally overwhelming for them. And for a parent, a child like that is really can be very stressful to take care of, because a very well-meaning parent who really wants to connect with their child really struggles, because things that kind of come automatically to, again, a neurotypical child are more difficult for a child who goes on to have a label of autism. So you get this kind of downward spiral of mismatch and disconnection that's so hard to repair. So then you insert technology into that. And what happens is, what can happen in a positive way is that a child can use technology as kind of a protective factor, as can a parent. But what becomes problematic is if both the parent and the child increasingly turn to technology as an avoidance of the difficulty of human interaction. And then, so the child may, you know, be more drawn to using their device, and then the parent, in frustration and feeling helpless and like a failure as a parent, then uses their own device. And then they become increasingly disconnected. So So a kind of core preventive approach is really to support parents in their efforts to be present with their child. And whether the limitations to that process come from external things or from internal things, it's really the same idea that when we can give parents the resources to be present with their child, then we help them to develop that course of mismatch and repair and develop a core positive sense of self.
I think you bring up a great point, and we have dealt with almost that exact situation in working with a young man that his device was actually what calmed him down, and the mother seemed to use it as a disciplinary tool, and it just didn't work, you know, and that became something that, you know, we explained that we were going to allow him, as we were going to this other program, we were going to allow him to have it, because there was no reason to cause that much turmoil when our goal is to get him somewhere where there are people who are trained to work with him.
Yeah.
And the mom saying, well, you know, he acted out, he did this, this, and this, and so, you know, he can't have that for this trip. I'm like, actually, we're making the decision from here on in, and if this makes it easier to get him there, they can deal with it once they get there as far as that issue, but they will do it over a slow period of time, not us trying to deal with them in a cut and dried, this is it type of thing, because it's just going to create more acting out, which is going to be on an airplane or in a car or in some form of travel. So, yeah, as you were saying that, I don't even know if all of our screens are up or if just you're up while that's happening, but I was starting to smile because I was thinking about a specific case, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, which is a good point too, Alan, and Dr. Gold, that, you know, as I'm thinking and I'm listening, you know, my mind's just kind of just all over the place. And really it's all about, you know, how do we help others navigate this terrain of uncertainty? And especially I think about the young kids and the infants and on this development, because, you know, what gets developed or what, you know, happens at a young age, we know carries through life. So it brings me to the point of, you know, what happens when technology creates, you know, real relationships. It's almost that same sense, you know, here's a kid, you know, that's autistic. And for him, that device is a relation. I mean, that's something he's connected to, or she. And so what happens? What are your thoughts with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at what is the function of the technology in the child's life. And rather than just simply taking it away, it is serving some function. Now, it's not a permanent solution, but yet if you recognize that the function of the device is to help a child to organize themselves in the face of kind of overwhelming onslaught of stimuli, then you need to find some other way to help them manage that rather than just taking it away. And I think, you know, Alan, that's what you were saying, is that when, you know, then you have to call in the troops, you know, the people, the actual people who then can be present with the child, have ways of calming themselves, you know, so both parents and professionals who work with kids who are very behaviorally disorganized need a lot of help themselves so that they can be calm and help a child who's very vulnerable in that way to become organized. But you can't simply take it away. And we do have a story in the book. You'll have to read the book, but it's a really kind of a surprise of how when people are really limited in their ability to interact with humans, then technology can really, you know, I mean, there are movies about it, like, you know, technology, when that happens, that's really problematic.
Yeah, that's dangerous. And we have some questions that have come in. This one says, I was so happy to see this subject, as my husband's family are so judgmental at the slightest disagreement I have with them. We live close and are obligated to spend way too much time with his outrageous male dominant group. I feel as though I have to put a muzzle on around them and be submissive. I agree that discussions and the occasional disagreement are healthy. He was quite considerate when we first got married, but now that we have three children, he's a different person. He and his family have labeled me as a complainer, and I have no clue how to deal with these attitudes and gain some respect. Would your book be of help to me? And that's from Gloria in Maine.
Well, I hope so. And I would hope that maybe perhaps you'd have some converts within the family as well, because it's hard to do it alone. Yeah. But I think, yeah, it starts with having an opening to curiosity. Like, well, you know, because we tend to, when someone says something that's offensive to us, just sort of shut down. And if we can instead say, I wonder where that's coming from, or what makes you think that, or tell me more about that. So I hope that maybe reading the book would give you the strength to be in your family in that kind of, from a stance of curiosity, and that might create an opening to more kind and less judgmental interaction.
Yeah. And I love your addition. It might be good to try to get some of the others to read it too. But you have to do it first yourself, because anybody, if you approach the thing and hand it to somebody and say, here, you have a problem, you need to read this, it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
I agree. We have another one that says, after 35 years of marriage, my parents still fight and bicker all the time. She feels neglected and he feels she is too needy, but heck if they are going to split up. I think they are so entrenched in this pattern, they will just keep the hamster wheel rolling until one of them kicks the bucket. How do you teach old dogs new tricks and turn their continual bickering into healthy disagreements? I would really like to see them have a more loving relationship. What can I or anyone do to help them? And that's from Belinda in North Carolina.
Yeah, well, I think it sounds painful to have seen them live through that through growing up, because, yeah, that's what happens, is people get stuck in patterns of interaction, and it can happen. I see it in my practice between kids and parents. And so there has to be, it's what we call in science, it's mutually dysregulating. So each person has a way of setting off the other, and you just get stuck in that negative way. So what we talk about in the book is to create kind of an opening, sort of similar to what I was saying in the last answer, is the idea of opening up a space for curiosity about what the other person intends. So I learned from another colleague of mine that if we can always keep in mind that there's some way in which the other person is right, that no matter how angry we are and how much we disagree with someone, just as we are so certain of our perspective, that person is certain of their perspective. And so there must be some way in which what they're saying makes sense. And that kind of framing of it, it's, you know, if you're in it, between the two of them, and neither of them wants to change, that's really hard. But perhaps, you know, somebody can create that kind of an opening of curiosity, and that that mutual dysregulation can be shifted out of that stuck pattern.
I like that.
I think that's a key word too, mutual.
Yeah.
You know, it really makes a difference, because if it's just one-sided, it's still, you know, objectively, it only looks one way. But that's good. Go ahead, Adam, sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say, and we only have a couple of minutes. In Chapter 5, you talk about your view of resilience in particular, that it is not an inborn trait nor a response to adversity, but rather a quality that develops through constant moments of mismatch and the repair of that. So share what you mean by that.
Yeah, so often people think of resilience as in kind of a judgmental way, like you're really resilient and that's great, or you don't have resilience. But the research, again, going back to Dr. Tronick's research, looking at how babies develop in a healthy way when they go through moments of mismatch to repair. And each time, you know, you start with a newborn baby who there is breastfeeding and the doorbell rings and the mother goes to answer the door. And in that time, the baby holds themselves together long enough to wait, and then the mother comes back. So those little increments of disruption that the baby goes through as they develop. And so the disruptions are bigger when you're 3 and 5 and 16. Every time you build this kind of muscle of resilience. So it's really embedded in a developmental process in relationship to other people who care for you.
Mm-hmm. So for everybody out there, the book is The Power of Discord. Claudia, so I assume you can get this anywhere. You can order it through Amazon, or is it best to go to your website? What's the best way for them to find it?
Well, yes, you can order it at any independent bookseller or Amazon or Barnes & Noble, anywhere. And if you go to our website, powerofdiscord.com, it gives you many different options for purchasing the book.
All right. So again, and that's thepowerofdiscord.com. If you're driving out there, don't try to write that down. We'll make sure we have it on the Answers for the Family website. Claudia, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on, and even more, I appreciate you writing the book, and your timing was, I think, impeccable. In fact, I was going to ask earlier, did you start writing this before COVID and then started to add to it or make changes once COVID hit?
Or? No, it was done way before COVID. Okay. You know, the book came out June 2nd, so it was in production 6 months before that. So, yeah, as I said, we had no idea that this is what we were actually writing about.
but again, for those reading it, when you read it, you get the feeling that parts of this were thought of while we're going through this. I mean, that's the feeling that I got. So, again, I think it's great and the timing is wonderful. So thank you so much for everything.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we're joined by Dr. Charlotte Markey, the author of The Body Image Book for Girls. Love yourself and grow. We'll talk about her findings after interviewing hundreds of girls and her practical experience as a mother of a teen. She will candidly address the stresses experienced by young girls, including puberty, unhealthy eating habits, too little physical activity, social media, friendships, sexual harassment, and so much more. So, and especially in this time of quarantine and things like that, I think that this was something that has been a problem for some time, but I think it's become much worse. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, or SoundCloud. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. Marvin, thank you so much for being here with me. I hope that your schedule is going to open up to where we can do this more often.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on, Alan, and look forward to it. I mean, there's so much to talk about. Elections are coming up around the corner. I have a lot of thoughts. I know you have some thoughts as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and thank you.
Okay. In fact, let's try to make that happen. So next week, let's do that, and let's put a little teaser out there for everybody Let's talk a little bit about some things that maybe people should think about prior to the election. Sound good?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
All right. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.